You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network. Visit jabberjawmedia.com for more shows like this one.
Hey guys, it's Mike here, and I wanted to tell you about the X-Man Podcast, which is also on the Jabberjaw Media Podcast Network. The X-Man Podcast is hosted by Doc Coyle. Doc isn't a superhero, though. He's a quitter. He's the ex-guitar player for metal band God Forbid. Through his show, Doc takes you through his emotional and mental journey as a 30-something dealing with challenging life transitions. His conversations with musicians, creatives, and industry professionals about their personal tribulations serves as a mutual therapy session to ask a fundamental question. What do you do when the main thing that defines you ceases to exist? Listen and find out more about the X-Man at www.doccoyle.net. Or, of course, at jabberjawmedia.com. Thanks. Hi, I'm Mike Mowry, president of Outer Loop Management and the co-host of this show. My team and I have been helping our musicians release their albums and EPs to get the biggest first week sales possible. And our strategies work. We consistently get first week debuts on the Billboard charts, leading to greater opportunities for my clients, great tours, media coverage, and industry attention. For the first time ever, I'm going to show you how I do it. Go to outerloopcoaching.com to learn more and register now for Release It Right, my online webinar on July 22nd, or Unleash It Right on July 22nd as well as July 29. Put in the code MENTALPOD5, all caps and all one word, and I will give you $5 off the price of either webinar, and I will give this show $5 as well. So you'll be supporting Blasco and me while also supporting your own career. Again, go to outerloopcoaching.com and use the code MENTALPOD5 to get $5 off either Release It Right on July 22nd or Unleash It Right on July 22nd and 29. Peace.
And welcome to episode 25 of the Managemental Podcast, a weekly discussion on hot topics in the music biz for the up-and-comers, the brand newbies, the beginners, and aspiring rock stars of tomorrow. Yes, the struggle is real, my friends, but let us help you uncover some of the mystery that is this challenging business of rock and roll. I am your host, Mr. Blasco, and I am excited to be here today. As always, I am joined by my good friend, the co-host from the other coast, a record label owner, fellow artist manager, and Olympic-level trampoliner, Mr. Mike Mowry.
Hello, hello. Thanks again for, having me here with you to talk through some of these amazing subjects. And yeah, you know, when you put me in slow-mo on a trampoline, I look really good, that's for sure. So,
you had some moves, my friend.
Hey, man. What they say, shake your moneymaker, you know what I'm saying?
In the last episode, we talked about record deal red flags. That was an insightful episode, so check it out if you haven't already. This week, we get into a listener's questions based on the costs associated with being in a touring band. This is going to be killer, so let's get mental. So, Michael, what's new in your world?
Oh, man, like I told you, I'm coming out of like a 48-hour just wipe me on my butt summer sickness, which is never a fun time. But I'm back on my feet, or at least I'm in my chair in front of my microphone and excited to dive into this topic.
Great. Well, it's good to have you back in action, my friend. This week, one of our new listeners, David Wolfel, wrote in and had some questions in relation to the overall working expenses associated with being in a touring band. He writes, I just discovered your podcast via an ad on the Lead Singer Syndrome podcast. Lead Singer Syndrome podcast. Say that fucking three times fast. I've listened through maybe half of the podcast so far, and they are great. I am not in the music industry at all, just an interested spectator. I have questions related to money. Yeah, don't we all?
I was going to say, don't we all? This is really cool, though. I mean, I love that he found us, you know, coming from Lead Singer Syndrome. Obviously, as many of you out there know, I am one of the people responsible for the podcast network, Jabberjaw Media, and this was the entire idea. We're trying to bring sort of like-minded hosts together and allow fans to have an easy way to discover, you know, similar podcasts. So this will serve as a bit of an ad for that. You know, go check out all of the other shows that we have. You can go to jabberjawmedia.com and find the list of some of the great ones there. And I like Lead Singer Syndrome a lot. It's done by Shane, the singer of Silverstein, and he interviews other lead singers. And he's just got a really good perspective. You know, he's been in his band for 15 plus years and just has a great eye and ear for, you know, relevant topics to cover with other singers, which is you know, it's nice that David likes that show and was able to segue over to ours and is digging in. So
for sure. And he's not even in the music, you know, he's not even in music at all, so it's kind of cool that he found interest in it anyway. So he writes some actually pretty relevant questions, and then I thought it was important for us to cover this topic for the newbies, right? So to shed some light on this. Anyway, number one, I would love for you to give an example of a small band income versus expenses, i.e. a band that can sell 500 tickets one or two times a year in a place like Denver. How much does this band earn from the venue, merch, VIP, etc.?
Yeah, I mean, this is really cool, and it's so appropriate with the timing for me. I've got a lot of artists that I would say are in this stage or even smaller, you know, in the developmental stage. They're signed bands. Maybe they've put out one full length and they're working on their second one, and, you know, we're searching for tours and a number of things like that. And inevitably, you know, this is the biggest challenge for all of them, is how do you make, you know, all of the money work? And, you know, my experience as a manager over the years, especially dealing with so many up and coming bands and developing artists, is, you know, this is the real challenge, is who, you know, of the bands that are able to figure out ways to get creative and really work through these times of hardship, those are the ones that you know, have the best chance of surviving to make it to a place where, you know, they're generating more and more income. So
yeah, I mean, look, to simplify, he's smartly asking about income versus expenses. So, I mean, if you're at a stage where you can be a headliner at 500 tickets in markets like Denver, you know, there's a lot of factors involved, right? But I mean, in terms of like how much the guarantee is, I mean, you're in the thousands. Right.
Yeah. And real quick, one thing, you know, you talk about the variables. I mean, in this case, it's how much is the ticket price, you know?
Yep.
And exactly. And that is, no matter what capacity you're in, if your ticket price is low, which when you're dealing with, you know, a lot of the bands that we've handled or work with over the years that do the Warped Tour and on the developmental status, you know, they've got low ticket prices. So no matter what, you know, a simple way to calculate the gross, if they can sell all 500 tickets in a market like Denver and the ticket price is $20, you and I both know that the maximum amount of money generated that night just from the ticket sales is $10,000. So, you know, I've always kind of used this simple formula in my head of, you know, taking that gross revenue and immediately chopping it in half. You know, 50% is going to go to the venue at a minimum. You know, and of course it always depends on the internal expenses there, but let's just, you know, use this as a really quick way to do math in your head. So you know that the headliner, or at least the package, because many of you out there that go to see tours that have two or three support acts, the headliner is then paying those acts. So the example that I'm using, 500 tickets, $20, you gross 10,000 bucks. Let's just say half of it goes to the venue. There's $5,000 left. So if you're able to sell those tickets on your own, you might be able to put those $5,000 into your pocket. Now, of course, you know, you've got to pay your agent out of that. You've got to pay your manager out of that. You got to pay your business manager if you have one and whoever else. Of course, all your crew and all of your expenses. But before you even get there, you know, you might be paying a support act. And so if you've got a good direct support band at this level, you might be paying them anywhere from $1,000 to $1,500 a night. So your $5,000 quickly goes down to $4,000 or $3,500. And then, you know, if you've got one or two more openers, maybe you're spending, you know, a total of another $500. So you're down to, you know, $3,000 before you're even doing any of those things like paying your agent, your manager, and your expenses. Does that make sense to you, Blasco, that quick and simple math that I use?
Without a doubt. And then the same concept applies to the merch and the VIP. Whatever you're doing in either of those, there are costs associated with it, right? So it's like if your VIP includes a shirt and a laminate and a signed poster and all that, like all those items, all those goods cost money. So that deducts from the gross. And then the merch, right? I mean, if you're doing $5 to $10 a head at 500 tickets, those are great numbers, but you have to also consider the fact that, those shirts and posters and, you know, stickers, whatever you're selling, all those cost money. So you have to deduct that. So, I mean, I think, look, from if you're doing 500 tickets in major markets as a headliner and you are selling merch and you are doing VIP, you're doing pretty well. I mean, I think on a typical night like this, there's thousands of dollars of gross income. And then it comes down to, though, how you want to spend that. Are you in a bus? Are you in a van? Are you in a car? Like, how is it that you're traveling? How big is your crew? All those expenses come into play, right? So, like, I've got situations where the bands break even because they spend so much money on their touring. And then I've got situations where everybody comes home with money because all the expenses are stripped down to the bare minimum so that everyone goes home with money. So it comes down to the individual bands and their needs and what it is that their expectations are in terms of delivering, you know, their concert or whatever, right? So, but you're in a good place. The bottom line is you're in a good place if you're doing this kind of business.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And, you know, just like you're saying, a lot of this depends on where an artist is in their career. You know, if they're young, 17, 18, 19, 20, and, you know, they're quickly on the rise and are able to sell these types of tickets and do good merch and VIP on, you know, their first or second tour, or, you know, maybe their, you know, just any of the tours on their first or second album, they're going to be in a good spot. They probably don't have as many, you know, personal expenses and overhead. They might still be living with their parents, or the band might have a group house, or, you know, even if they're living with a significant other, you know, they're not in a spot that's got, you know, a mortgage potentially, or any of the things that come with, you know, trying to live on these same numbers when, you know, you're older. So there's just so many factors that we could get into the weeds on, but I do think you're right. I mean, I remember years and years and years ago with Darkest Hour, we had to calculate, you know, kind of where our average guarantee needed to be in order to just break even, you know, and that was really the determining factor. And, you know, merch and certain things like that, which are going to vary from tour to tour, you know, we didn't want to have to rely on those necessarily. And I think we came up with it needed to be about $1,500 a night just for us to get, you know, a bare minimum break even. And I believe that was even while doing the tour in a van with very limited crew. So, you know, like I said, if you're in this situation and you got a $20 ticket, you know, and you're paying your support, you're going to be making grossing anywhere between $3,000 and $5,000 a night, which is a really good place to, you know, to start from.
No doubt. He adds on to the first question, what if they get minimal radio play so that their music sale income is Spotify and iTunes?
Yeah, I mean, this is a bit of a, you know, I'm assuming here that the question is, if you're getting minimal radio play and more people are finding out about you and then they're, you know, going to listen to you on Spotify and iTunes, is that your understanding?
I believe that he's just kind of like inquisitive about the income stream, but it really comes down to if the artist is signed to a record label that owns their masters or not, because unless they're rolling in profit mode, they're not seeing any income from their music regardless.
Right. Yeah. And so the point you're trying to make is, you know, whether or not it's coming in Spotify and iTunes or even, you know, physical product, the way that it works with a recording contract, if you're signed to a label, is that you've got some sort of royalty coming back to you. And of course, that comes off of the artist has to be recouped in order to see any of that income directly into, you know, their accounts. And inevitably, if they're getting radio play, somebody's paying to, you know, pitch the stations, which comes with a relatively hefty price tag most often. So,
yeah, I mean, if we're talking about touring and we're talking about income and we're talking about income from music, the one thing that some labels used to do that I thought was the most awesome thing was that the labels would give their bands free product to sell on the road in lieu of tour support, meaning we're a smaller label, we can't give you tour support, but we know that you're out there and you're humping the product. So we're going to give you as much that you can sell, and whatever you sell from that, you keep as tour support. And I always thought that was awesome, because whenever you see, you know, and conversely, record labels charge their bands upwards of $7-$8 for product to sell on the road, the profit margin on that is so drastically small, and it's such a ripoff, right? From the labels ripping off the bands. Like, we know that it costs a dollar to make this and you're selling it to me for $7.50 or whatever. I got to sell it for $10. I'm only making a few dollars on it or whatever. But I made this product and I'm out here humping it while you're in your air conditioned office. You know what I mean? Like, it's just kind of like I always thought it was really great that labels offered that. And then conversely, I get so pissed off whenever labels charge upwards of $7 or $8, you know, wholesale to the bands to sell their product.
Yeah, I mean, again, like anything that we chat about, there's just so many scenarios that it's challenging to be able to, you know, give just, you know, a blanket statement as to how things work. But inevitably, I guess, let's assume that a band is getting minimal radio play. Yeah, you would hope that that translates into increased Spotify numbers as well as increased iTunes and Apple Music numbers. And as those numbers go up, more income is indeed generated. It's then based on the deal that's in place as to where that money goes. So if you own your own masters, you know, and the best example I can think of that about in recent years is Macklemore, where he owned his own masters, but did a distribution deal with ADA and was able to tap into ADA's radio department and was paying a la carte. And I don't know what the price tag associated with it was, but inevitably, you know, he was paying them a smaller fee, a distribution fee, as well as, you know, having to pay off the costs associated. But the majority of the income was coming back to, again, their overall gross income. Then how is that split up? It really depends on the number of players involved. So it can get complicated very, very quickly, but you'd like to see and hope that radio play does help increase those things.
Yeah. I also want to point out that this line of questioning is very in line with reality, in that this isn't an overreaching fantasy. There are plenty of independent bands that are out there doing 500 cap rooms on their own, making a living with no radio play. It's happening. I mean, from my own experience, I just got done doing a tour of 500 to 1,000 cap rooms as a headliner with not only no radio play, but like no anything. Like it's a cover band. We can't even have radio play. You know what I mean? And stuff. So this is in the realm of reality, I think, here.
Yeah. And I would say this is, you know, the norm, as opposed to, you know, this is the, you know, I talk about the rule versus the exception. I mean, again, there's a lot of bands that would love to get to this spot, and, you know, people like yourself and myself and the team surrounding them really strive to try to get them to this spot and then figure out ways to take them, you know, to another spot. Over the past couple of years, I've always had a joke that, you know, 500 is the new 1,000. It used to be that artists of a certain stature, I think, you know, amongst us in the industry, if we're talking about a band and think of them in a certain place, it used to be that they could sell 1,000 tickets a night. Now, those artists, or artists that we consider to be quote unquote of that stature, 500 tickets is, you know, that new 1,000. So as more and more bands have had to hit the road, the marketplace is incredibly saturated. Being able to sell 500 tickets is actually a really good accomplishment.
Agreed. He continues, what does it cost them to tour, hire a few techs, gas, food, some hotels, or an RV?
Yeah, again, this stuff can vary largely. Obviously, certain things like gas are going to be dependent upon, you know, what the gas prices are, but also what type of vehicle you're in. But, you know, a quick and easy way that I used to do this, I was a tour manager for a long time and built many, many budgets. You know, I would just route everything back on whatever it was at the time, MapQuest, and figure out all of the approximate mileage, and then, you know, figure out what the miles per gallon were for the vehicle we were in, multiply it by the average gas price, and you had a pretty good number of what, you know, your gas budget was going to be. You know, the vehicle is really the first question that most bands have to debate. You know, is it, we're going to be in a bus? Okay, there's a lot of bands that, if they afford a bus, none of them are coming home with money in their pockets. So then you've got things like bandwagons, which have come on the market, which is, you know, a bit more of a hybrid, and it's better than an RV. I mean, my take on an RV is that those are designed for you and your family to drive to a campsite and park it for a couple days. You know, it's not meant for the slog of, you know, 300, 400, 500, 600 mile treks day to day to day. Inevitably, every band that I've seen in an RV does it for about a tour.
Yep.
You know, techs, of course, are going to depend on, again, you know, the level that you're at, what you can offer. And you and I both know, I mean, there's plenty of people out there that want to get out on the road and will do it for a semi-decent price, depending on, you know, the overall budget and who the band is and if they like the people in the band. But all of these things do start to add up. And these are the hard decisions that artists have to make with their teams as to how to minimize these expenses, so you can inevitably look at your bottom line and decide, are we going to come home and put money in our pockets, or is this just something that is a building experience and we want to be comfortable?
Out of the gate, I mean, look, I mean, you got to start small, right? You got to keep your, as you're beginning, you have to keep your expenses small so that there's a profit margin there. A few potential tips would be, bring out one person, and that one person is a tour manager / merch person. That way they can organize getting from point A to point B, and then whenever you're there, they're selling the merch so you don't have to walk away from it while you're playing. I always think that's kind of a big mistake. And take turns driving. You know, you don't need a driver yet. Everybody take turns, even if it's like 2-hour shifts and everyone can sleep. Look, I mean, it's brutal. I mean, it's when you're starting off, it's, you know, it's not fun unless you're having fun. And there's plenty of bands out there that are slogging it out and they're having a blast, you know, and they can get it done. But, you know, like I said, best tip, start small, work your way up, work out your daily expenses. Whenever you're budgeting, don't necessarily budget so conservatively in that you have to stay in this really tight framework to make a dollar. Like, do that, but then overcompensate by, you know, maybe 15 to 20% of miscellaneous expenses that you weren't anticipating or emergencies that you weren't anticipating. You know, this last tour that we did, the opening band, they started the tour on their van. Their van didn't even make it to the first gig. They had to pull it over. They had to rent a car and they had to attach their trailer to this SUV that they had to rent or whatever. They left the van at this shop. They did the majority of the tour in this SUV. And then on the way back, as the tour was circling back to the West Coast, they had to swoop down and pick up the van and return the SUV. And they got back in the van and did the last, you know, third of the or last quarter of the tour in their van or whatever, right? These were all costs that they did not anticipate that, you know, really dinged their budget, which unfortunately, you know, if they would have known that their van wasn't going to make it, they could have budgeted accordingly ahead of time, you know. Anticipate that shit will get fucked up and put a little extra in the budget, because let me tell you something, shit's going to get fucked up.
Yeah, that is, of course, those things are nightmares, but they happen all the time. And, you know, I do think it's nice to note, you know, you mentioned, you know, you got to be having fun. I mean, especially in the developmental stages, you know, I work with a lot of bands who, frankly, I'm so surprised that they don't feel like this need that they need to contribute, you know, into these funds of trying to go on tour and trying to grow and develop their band. And we, of course, always want to try to do things as smart as possible. But a small business, you know, things take upstart capital, and that capital comes from a number of places. Yeah, your record label might be able to help you out. Your merchandise company might be able to help you out by fronting you merch and you paying it off later. But inevitably, you know, the members that are in a band are the owners of that company. And, you know, as they go out there, they need to be prepared to pump their own money into it. So whether that means they're working a job ahead of time or getting a job when they come home to, you know, not only support their lifestyle when they're at home, but also to supplement, you know, their band expenses and their personal expenses while they're on the road. You know, you mentioned food in there. Inevitably, if you're selling 500 tickets, your band is probably capable of giving you a buyout each day. You know, that's part of the venue expenses that might be negotiated. And so you've got the opportunity to go eat, or, you know, they might provide food for you there. They might give you a little bit of a rider, and your band might budget in a per diem, you know, so you might have the money to do that. But inevitably, if that money doesn't exist, you know, the band members themselves, they've got to figure out ways to, you know, feed themselves while they're on the road. I'm sure, Blasco, you've been in the situation where, you know, you're eating Taco Bell for, you know, $2 a meal at best, you know, or fast food or whatever it is, you know, that you're able to make work within the limited amount of money that you're either getting from your band or that you're willing to put in from your own pocket.
Yeah. He concludes, basically, do most band members have regular jobs at home to make ends meet?
Regular is, of course, a subjective term. But, yeah, I mean, almost all of the artists that I work with have to find additional ways to supplement their income. You know, some of them are fortunate where if they've built, you know, a career for themselves and have, you know, other skill sets that might be tangential to music, meaning they can record artists in their spare time. They might be able to write songs for, you know, commercials, or, you know, they might use their stature as, you know, a member in a popular band to launch a clothing line or something like that. But yeah, inevitably, most band members at the 500 cap or lower are going to be working some sort of job in between tours. Is that your experience as well?
Mike, you know, let's be clear. I'm in one of the biggest bands in the world and I have a job. to make ends meet. Now, granted, my situation is different in that I'm a hired gun, right? So I'm not getting, I get paid whenever we play gigs, and I'm not getting a piece of the merch or VIP or anything associated with being a member of a band that you're splitting amongst your band members, right? So it's a different scenario, but the point of it is, even whenever I wasn't, you know, I had a job that, for example, the band that was just on tour with us that was opening, the one guy, he's a hairdresser. Another guy works at Guitar Center. Whenever I was, you know, doing the band thing early on, I worked at a used clothing store. I was a bartender. I think that, you know, how it breaks down is to, if you're in a band and you anticipate touring, the best thing that you can do for yourself in terms of having a job to make ends meet is having something flexible that you can come and go from, get your shifts covered, that your boss knows that you're in a band and is accepting of your come and go lifestyle. That's going to be an important thing to look for. Now, the advantage of the world that we're living in now is you can have an on the go type of job that you can run from your laptop and your cell phone. For example, whenever I go on tour, no one really knows that I'm on tour because I'm comfortably doing my job from my laptop and my cell phone, and it doesn't get in the way of business other than the hour and a half that I'm on stage at nighttime. I'm otherwise totally accessible and working all the time. So that's for younger bands, I mean, maybe there's something that you can do along the lines of starting a home business that you can take with you on the road. As long as you have Wi-Fi, you're in good shape.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And I remember Kevin Lyman, you know, the founder of the Warped Tour, always saying that, you know, he thought that companies like Uber, maybe more Lyft, you know, were going to save the music business because it allows, you know, people to be able to go home and have something flexible that they can dive right back into and make money. Because he knows, you know, most of the bands, even out on his tour, or at least the developmental ones, they're all having to do work outside of their bands when they are at home, or even, like you said, while they are on the road. So, you know, it's an interesting place, and I'm watching things continue to change. You know, I work with a number of developing artists, and I do find that, you know, money is always the biggest challenge with everything. And it's interesting to watch how different people approach it. Some artists really understand, okay, this is exactly what I want to do. I'm totally fine with working my butt off when I'm at home to be able to put everything that I can into my band in the hopes that I can get out on the road. And others, you know, have a little bit different vibe and almost a bit more of an entitlement where they sort of just think things should magically work because they're in a band. And, you know, that that never seems to be what actually works. So,
yeah. Well, hey, David, thanks for writing in. We certainly appreciate it. And that concludes episode 25. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. We'll be back here next week. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Blasco1313. We encourage you to email us any questions or comments you may have, like David did, for the podcast to me directly at askblasco@gmail.com. Because, hey, people, we do the show for you. Consider it a tool for understanding this ever so challenging and confusing business of music. If you have listened thus far, much respect to you for making efforts to educate yourselves and taking your future into your own hands. Mike, any final parting thoughts?
Nah, just like you, I'll echo thanks to David. I really appreciate it when listeners do write in. It's awesome to, you know, be able to try to walk through some of this stuff that, you know, you and I see on a daily basis, but inevitably to those outside of the music business, or even those that, you know, are only dealing with, you know, their one band within the business, you know, these are interesting topics for us to cover, and it's really fun. You know, I've got, of course, my own perspectives, but it's nice to hear yours as well. Just wanted to say, as you guys hear each and every week, Please find us wherever you are listening to this podcast and give us a rating and review. It's always helpful for us, for other people to continue to find us. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Mike O'Loop. And as many of you know, my Outer Loop coaching career continues to expand, and I've got two more courses that are on sale. Webinars on July 22nd for Release It Right, which is going to be really exciting, about walking artists and teams through setting up a release, as well as Unleash It Right, which is July 29th, which is going to expand on the July 22nd workshop and show you the tools that you need to ensure that, you know, you get your release in the best chart positions and streaming situations possible. So thanks again, everybody. Looking forward to hearing your feedback.
Thanks, everybody.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget. And we decide if they brought the One Hit Thunder or were nothing more than a one hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week, so pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.